This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. There are more than 120,000 Americans currently on the transplant waiting list, many of whom will only receive the life-saving organ they need if someone else's family member passes away. It's a tragic conundrum, but many donor families develop a relationship with the individuals whose lives their loved ones save. Bringing us a personal look at organ donation during National Donate Life Month is Shelby Lapine, whose son Luke died in an accident in 2014, and Bill Rep, who received Luke's heart. Also joining us is Andy O'Malley, the Public Affairs Director for Cincinnati's Life Center Organ Donor Network. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Shelby, I'm really sorry to hear about the loss of your son. That's a difficult situation. Can you tell us about what happened?
Luke, he graduated high school, and then he started working for the Clinton County Highway Department as a weed-eating crew. And they were driving down the road. They had Luke on the tailgate of the truck. And because of speed, Luke fell out in the back of the truck. And long story short, he was taken to Miami Valley with severe head injury. They did surgery, and the swelling was just so bad. There was no turning around. And his accident was on June 9th. And on June 13th, they pronounced him.
And he was how old at the time?
19.
Oh, goodness. So very young.
Mm-hmm. He's my only child. But it's been a tough road. But we started the Live for Luke Foundation. And
I can speak for Shelby. Everything that she's done in raising awareness about organ and tissue donation has been in honor of Luke. And I can say she's just done so much in Clinton County in particular to really share with people the legacy that her son was able to leave, but also to highlight the importance of registering to be an organ and tissue donor. The elected officials have really surrounded her with love and support, and just the government, in Clinton County, it's just been really interesting to see all of the support and momentum that she really has led the charge in, and just, motivating people to register and just, again, leaving that legacy of who her son was. It's really been special to work with her.
Shelby, was Luke a registered donor?
Yes. Okay,
so he'd already made that decision.
Yes, and the hospital talked to us about it, and we didn't even discuss it. We just said, this is what he would want, And so the very next day, on June 14th, it's when they took Luke to surgery to retrieve the organs. So, and then, at the hospital, I knew I was going to meet this man. I didn't know who he was, but I knew in my heart I was going to. And, I've met, of course, Bill, Luke's heart recipient. I've met his kidney recipient, the family of his liver recipient. I've got letters from tissue recipients.
So Luke's unfortunate death ended up helping a lot of people.
Close to 75 people.
Is that pretty typical?
Yes. As we were saying, the gifts of organ and tissue donation can help countless people. With tissue, it's typically around 50, but it could be more than that. Mm-hmm. So in Luke's case, he was able to just bless so many people with those gifts. And
he gave sight to two men also.
And I think, too, what even makes the story more amazing is that, Shelby has built this connection with one of Luke's recipients. And again, I think that that's just something very special that folks need to hear that story. It doesn't happen very often, but to know that her son is, living on and another person really, really is just, it's a wonderful story.
Shelby, what kind of a person was Luke?
Oh, you got about 5 hours because I can just talk. Luke was, he was never judgmental. He loved people. He was caring. He was helping. I mean, he was so kind to everybody. One of his best friends, his name is Nate. He had Down syndrome. Luke didn't look at that. He didn't look at the outside. And when my husband met Nate, he was shocked. He's like, I didn't even know he had Downs, because to Luke, it was just Nate. You know, that's just how he was. And he would give that, lend that extra hand. He would, you know, family dinners, he'd be the first one there to help get stuff prepared. And, you know, of course, he would nibble as he went. But he's just, he's an amazing kid. Amazing kid. He had big dreams. He was going to plan on going to Los Angeles, go to college. He already kind of had his foot in the door with LAPD, because we have a friend that works there. And he had his life planned, but God had other plans, so.
Hmm. How does it make you feel, knowing that he's helped so many people?
It's bittersweet for me, you know. I mean, losing a child is one of the worst things you can ever go through. And, you know, I live with that pain every single day. But knowing he lives, you know, he lives on in all these people, that gives me so much comfort. And it does bring me peace. And just like when I met Bill for the first time, this peace just fell all over me. The weight on my shoulders was gone.
Yeah, it's difficult to lose a child, but it has to give you some comfort to know that he's benefited so many.
Yeah.
We will continue our conversation after this. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Programming is made possible by Movers and Makers, spotlighting those who shape Cincinnati arts, culture, and community engagement. The May issue profiles Greater Cincinnati Foundation President Ellen Katz, poet and marketer Erica Minton of the CSO, and previews the 10th annual Hats Off Luncheon, moversmakers.org.
Interested in something you heard on WVXU? Like 91.7 WVXU on Facebook and continue the conversation with the community of WVXU listeners who share your curiosity about the world. Get the latest headlines, comment on the news of the day, and stay connected to the programs you enjoy. Facebook gives you easy access to the information that keeps you well informed and provides a platform to participate in the discussion. Be part of the WVXU Facebook community by liking 91.7 WVXU today.
Support comes from Indigenous, a handcrafted gallery featuring contemporary arts, crafts, and jewelry by local and regional creators. Indigenous presents their annual art tile exhibit with 1,000 ceramic tiles by 30 nationally recognized artists. Art tile is unveiled on April 30th in time for Mother's Day. Indigenous at 2010 Madison Road and at indigenouscraft.com.
Support comes from the CSO. Your Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra is proud to announce Classical Roots with special guest Common, Academy Award-winning recording artist. This uplifting celebration happens one night only, Friday, April 29th in Music Hall. Tickets at cincinnatisymphony.org, where passion comes to play. WVXU goes wherever you do. Listen to 91.7 online at iHeartRadio.com and on your mobile device through the iHeartRadio app.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and bringing us a personal look at organ donation during National Donate Life Month is Shelby Lapine, whose son Luke died in an accident in 2014 at the age of 19, and Bill Rep, who received Luke's heart. And also joining us is Andy O'Malley, the Public Affairs Director for Cincinnati's Life Center Organ Donor Network. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. Bill, let's talk about this from your perspective, your story. Why did you need a heart transplant?
In 2004, I was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy, and I went many years with a pacemaker. When 2011, 12 got here, I progressively got worse over the years. It got to the point where I was life flighted to Cleveland from Columbus, and they were going to put an LVAD in me with a left ventricle assistance device. And when I got to Cleveland, they saw me, and I'd been going there previously. My cardiologist was at Cleveland. I'd been seeing, but when I got there, they said they didn't know if they're going to do it. I didn't think I was going to make it because I was in pretty bad shape. So they went ahead and took the risk, and they did it. That was in 12. So for 2 years, I carried around batteries. I had a pump and a controller, and they kept telling me I was on a list, but I was on the B list because it's a bridge to transplant. And I caught an infection in my driveline of my LVAD. And my surgeon, his name is Dr. Mazami, he told me that unless that infection was taken care of, that I wasn't going to live. And he said, I'm going to find you a heart. I'm going to find you a heart in a few months. And thank the Lord that he did. But then again, like Shelby's saying, it's kind of bittersweet because somebody had to die for me to live. It was, and that's kind of hard to deal with, you know, personally for me. And I think for anybody would have to go through that. It's just kind of tough.
So, and how long were you on the waiting list altogether?
I was on the waiting list 2 years total, okay. But I was on B for most of that. I was on the A list for probably 6 months, which put me, the infection put me at the top of the list.
Moved you up on that list.
Yes, yeah. Moved me up. That's where what Tanya was talking about. You know, it's where you're at on the list. Or you could be on a B, but then all of a sudden you could become an A that quick just because of an infection. You know, so you could change, and there's other people.
Your situation maybe gets more critical.
Critical, yeah. Correct.
So what's life like for you now?
It's awesome. I mean, it's one the day after my surgery, I was in my bed and I woke up out of ICU and I was awake and I could take a breath. I was like, wow, I can breathe because the cardiomyopathy kind of, you can't breathe.
Makes you shorter breath.
Shorter breath. The next day, I was sitting in the chair next to my bed and I was ready to come home. I had a big bandage on me, but I was like, wow, totally different person. It's so strange.
That is amazing. Did you have to go through a lot of rehab after this or?
After the transplant, no.
Okay.
After the LVAD, yes. Between 12 and 14, I was in the hospital 6 months. I had to learn how to walk again because I was out. But after the transplant, and I was in the hospital for about 6 days, and they sent me to a motel on campus to just get my pills and all my the regimen of everything I had to do and everything I had to take. And they weaned me through that and went home. Here I am.
Wow.
Well, and who initiated the meeting between you and Luke's family? With how did that come about?
I went through Life Connections because that's who services Dayton area, and Tracy Kropp is who I would talk to and everything. And my stepdaughter Angel wrote all the recipients a letter, and I don't even know what it said. I never read it actually. And they got our letter, and then a few months later, I got an email from Tracy and said, you know, here's your letter from the heart recipient. And I got his name and
made the phone call.
And it was weird because it was one morning, I couldn't sleep. It was like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I know this sounds crazy, but I smelled cologne around me twice. And 2 hours later, I'm on the phone with my heart family. That's the truth.
Yes. What did you think when you got that call?
I wanted to know bad when I was in a Cleveland clinic when I was there. But they said, oh, we can't tell you because we're not allowed to do that because of this and this, you know, the recipient or the donor family. And I said, but we got you a good heart. And then I woke up, that morning, we found out when Angel had sent us the letter.
Mm-hmm.
We thought, oh, okay, this is good. But we didn't know. All we knew his name was, I don't think we knew his name. I think we just said, you know, your heart family. She didn't mention his name, I don't believe. But then that morning, my wife had been looking on Facebook and stuff and saw where the accident. And she says, oh, this is supposed to be the one, Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah, she says.
And it was kind of funny.
You were saying earlier you had that feeling. Right.
Strange how things like that work. I mean, you know.
Then they were telling me, before they got our letter, after he got home, because Luke was a big golfer. He was good at golf.
Yeah.
I don't know where he got it from, but I try to say me, but it's not true. But he got home from the hospital, and he said, I think I'm going to take up golf.
I was driving off my best friend. We were driving on the road one day, and he's a big golfer. He golfs all the time. And I never golfed. I mean, I did a lot of things, but I never golfed. And I was driving down the road one day and said, I'm going to take up golf. This is before I met them. I said, I'm going to take up golf.
Before you knew Luke was a golfer.
Right.
And when they told me that, I had goosebumps. I was like, oh, my God.
And then they said that, too. Like,
I have goosebumps, too, right now, Shelby.
Yeah, it was kind of neat. You know, I was like, wow, you know, maybe there is something to all, you know.
Andy, what you're talking about what he was told in Cleveland, what is the policy as far as recipients meeting a donor's family? Is there a certain amount of time that has to pass before that can happen?
We prefer that typically at least 6 months to a year. There's a time to wait just so that the patient has time to heal. Donor family obviously is going through, you know, very difficult grieving period. So we try to do that, and then at that point, we receive a communication from either the donor family or the recipient, then we would contact the other side to let them know we've received that communication and ask if they'd like to receive it. And so that's typically how that process works. And again, it's not really normal for it to progress to this point where these relationships have formed, which I think is what makes, you know, your connection so special, because that does not happen very often.
I found out that she was so close to us. You know, she was thinking that we were in New York, mm-hmm. you know, and then I found out that she was in Wilmington. I was like, well, shoot, that's not just an hour south of mm-hmm. us, you know. So, and we got together and we spent New Year's together, and we've been, you know, it's just like the second family.
Got to hear my son's heart at midnight. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, just, mm-hmm. you know, and
I always say, you know, I told Carla this morning, Bill's wife, I said, you know, when you guys come around, it's so much better because I literally have Luke's heart and soul with me.
Oh, well, what was the first meeting like?
We met at my church. We kind of I made it at a private event, but I did invite certain people because I wanted to show what organ donation can do. So we had city officials there, family. A few close friends. Bill's family came.
And my friends.
The news was there. Our local newspaper, because I wanted to get the word out of organ donation and what Luke has done and his legacy. You know, this is all for him. And, you know, and Bill and all the other recipients he has. And so they come in. Tracy Kropp came down. Life Connections and Kara Steele came down for it also. And Channel, was it two? Yeah, Katie Houston, her film crew and all that stuff was there. But anyway, I seen him like walking through, and I kind of like just turned around, and I was just watching Luke's picture. And then when they came down the aisle and turned, and we just hugged, but when I got to him, I lost it.
Oh. I can imagine.
Yeah.
It wasn't awkward for me. It felt right. It felt like that puzzle piece right just fit.
Yeah, I think it was the same for us too. I mean, it's like it's just like
a family reunion.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a family reunion. Everybody met. It was just a happy time, kind of. You know.
And we went. We went back to our house, and they seen where. You know, Luke's room and where we lived. We went out for pizza. And
she gave me a golf club.
I gave him a golf club. Luke would hit golf balls out in the back field. And we would still find them because the tractors would plow them up or whatever. And whoop, there comes another golf ball. Whoop, there's another one. And I just throw them in a bag. And I gave him a bunch of golf balls.
Got a bag of dirty golf balls and a good, nice golf club. So.
Yeah.
But all from Luke.
Exactly.
All from Luke. Andy, how beneficial is it for a donor's family and a recipient to meet? I mean, is that part of the healing process?
I definitely believe it's a part of that healing process. You know, for a donor family to actually connect with, you know, one of their loved ones' recipients and to be able to see firsthand that, wow, you know, they are living on through someone else, again, speaks to that legacy that they're able to leave. But absolutely, I think it's healing for both sides, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
This is a meant to be thing, you know, and everything happens for a reason. Sometimes we don't know what those reasons are, which, you know, like losing my son. And, you know, I was telling them this morning, you know, why Luke? Why did it happen? But then the guilt hits me. And I think, okay, if it wasn't for Luke, Bill wouldn't be here then.
Yeah, and I say, Elvis, why me?
And then he says the same thing. So.
You know, as old as I was, and I have a 19-year-old kid's heart, and I think it's just fantastic. I mean, I was 55 when that happened, or 54 when I had my transplant. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I've lived my life. You know, I've gone through a lot of things in my life up to this point, and he was just starting out in his life. And that's the part that makes it bad, sad for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though I am living, I mean, that's the bittersweet part.
Right. Mm. And it does heal. I mean, it does heal. It helps me. It comforts me. And I almost feel protective of him. Like, I'm like, nobody better mess with him, because you're going to answer to me.
Well, Shelby, Bill, and Andy, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Shelby Lapine, whose son Luke died in an accident in 2014. Bill Rep, who received Luke's heart. Also joining us is Andy O'Malley, the Public Affairs Director for Cincinnati's Life Center Organ Donor Network.